Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
And I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
And welcome to another episode of the Mid-Musings podcast, the podcast where we raise awareness about disabilities and everyday issues that affect mental health. And on today's episode, I have a guest who is a psych therapist and she's based in San Diego. So welcome to the Mid-Musings podcast, Beth. She's called Beth Warren, by the way, Bethany Warren. Welcome, and let's hear a bit about you. What do you, all these things that you do as a psychotherapist, how did it all start?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. My career started about 25 years ago. I originally started as a social worker working in the hospital with women on the maternity floor. So in labor and delivery, in the neonatal intensive care unit and postpartum. And I worked there for about, 9 years and simultaneously also started a small private practice because I became really passionate about working with women and couples throughout the reproductive period. In the hospital, I was doing a lot of crisis work. You know, essentially I would see people when they had a negative outcome, when their babies would go to the neonatal intensive care, when they had a traumatic birth, when they had a loss, etc. And I became more and more interested in not just doing the crisis work, but really working with people throughout their entire story and wanting to hold space and help people with their healing. And I also became really interested in preventing trauma and was really curious about what makes a traumatic birth experience or what makes something traumatic or not traumatic for something, and have since learned how much is the subjective experience, not just what happens to us, but how it feels, how we're talked to, how we're engaging with the providers, etc. So anyway, I've been in private practice ever since, and I've written a couple of books for people, and I'm just really passionate about working with people throughout the reproductive period, the short of it.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, it's amazing that you work with all these people and during a time when they are going through this trauma with their reproduction. And it's, how much of that is impacted by the fact that you worked in social services and the work that you do right now? What has inspired you to carry on with it?
Yeah, I think just from the very beginning, I was so passionate about working with people during such a vulnerable but precious time of their lives, and that all throughout the reproductive period, it can be so fraught with very vulnerable and traumatic touch points, but it doesn't have to be. And I continued to see, especially in my private practice, that women and their partners were oftentimes experiencing traumatic experiences, even from conception on, going through infertility experiences, for example, having pregnancy complications, postpartum complications, births, losses, breastfeeding, etc. But it doesn't always have to be that way. And that's why I've been so passionate about talking publicly about this, why I've written my books, just to help empower people to learn about resources. I also love working with providers to help them learn more and more about providing true trauma-informed care that is safe for their clients and their patients, that respects agency and autonomy, empowers people to make their choices with informed consent, knowing what to expect, for example. It's when we're talking to our clients like this, rather than this like top-down dictatorship, you know, this is what's going to happen. It's more explaining all the choices and empowering people to make choices when available, etc.
Thank you so much for that explanation. Yes, there's so much packed into that little bit of explanation that you've talked about. You've talked about the concept of reproductive trauma itself. And when people are going through fertility journeys, when they find out that, okay, they can't even have a child, that is it's trauma in itself. And yeah. Also, the fact that sometimes you actually have a baby that at the end of the pregnancy, you then find it difficult to bond with the baby. How does this all pan together? Like, what is this reproductive trauma? How does it affect people? There's so many, because I've noticed that I have friends. I have actually gone through 5 rounds of IVF cycles. It wasn't successful. That affected me mentally, and I decided, well, I can't pull myself through that anymore. And I know it's the same for other people. I know it's the same for people who experience a child loss, at birth. And I know it's the same for people who actually can't even get pregnant at all. So, yes. So many things go on. Could you explain the concept of reproductive trauma in simple terms so that listeners can even understand what we are talking about? Because some people haven't gone through this experience and they don't know what it's like.
Yes. And thank you so much for sharing your experience so vulnerably. That I think takes a lot of courage and bravery. So thank you. And I honor that. I'm so sorry that that's what you've been through. Yeah, the idea of reproductive trauma is so important to talk about, because some people might not even name what they've been through as trauma. They might just recognize that they don't feel like themselves, or that it's hard to talk about what they've been through. Or maybe it's not even that it's hard to talk about what they've been through, but when they think about it, there's something in their body that feels really activating, or emotionally it feels so raw and tender, or maybe even it is playing over and over in a loop in their mind. Or maybe they can talk about certain aspects of it and other aspects of it feel walled off, like, oh, I don't want to go there in my mind. I might even blame myself or feel like a failure, or I feel broken when I think about these aspects, but other parts of it I can talk about openly, or I might even feel courageous, or I might even feel victorious. So it can be a very mixed bag. The nature of reproductive trauma is not exactly what happened to us, but how it was perceived and how it was felt, because there can be numerous touch points all throughout our reproductive journeys that can be experienced as traumatic. And it's very subjective. So, for example, one woman might experience an urgent emergent C-section and might come through that experience and say, look at what I'm capable of. I feel, you know, like a warrior. I feel fearless. Look at what my body was able to do, and feel like she recovers fairly well emotionally. Another woman might have an emergency C-section and feel powerless. Maybe she even is blaming herself for having, quote, failed. Maybe she feels like she did something wrong or didn't meet her own expectations. And for her, when she thinks of her cesarean section, maybe she's blaming herself or feels a lot of shame or feels guilty. And that's what I mean about the subjective nature of trauma, is here we have two women who experienced essentially the same thing, but yet have very different lived experiences, both physiologically in their body. When they think about it, it feels quite different, but also emotionally and the way that they're talking to themselves afterward. So reproductive trauma means that you are holding trauma, you are holding stress and distress emotionally and maybe even physiologically after an activating or distressing event throughout the reproductive period. Reproductive period means from conception, pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. So you might hear, like on social media, for example, birth trauma is getting a lot more traction. People are talking more and more about traumatic birth experience, but I like to expand the conversation more to include the entire reproductive journey, which also includes conception, pregnancy, loss, birth, and postpartum, because there's so many other experiences that can be experienced as traumatic. That's why my second book I wrote as Healing from Reproductive Trauma. I didn't want to limit the experience to just birth trauma, because there's so many other lived experiences.
Sounds so broad, you know, as you've talked about the recovery process. Sometimes when people have gone through this trauma, and you've talked about the subjective nature of it. And also, I mean, does reproductive trauma, does it only affect women? Because you're talking about the birth cycle. Are men also impacted by reproductive trauma?
Oh, I'm so glad you're asking, because I wanted to bring this point up. So thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Men and same-sex partners also can experience trauma throughout all of these experiences. And they often experience it in different ways. Because they are often the observer, they often experience powerlessness, terror. They feel so left out of the discussion, of the conversation. They're often over here watching their partner go through maybe a near death experience and or something terrifying, watching their baby and feeling very helpless. You know, it's really interesting when we look at the statistics that one out of three men whose babies are in the NICU, for example, will experience full post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. Men who have gone through their partner's birth traumas will also be at higher risk for their own depression, anxiety, PTSD, for example. And we already know that dads and partners are at risk for perinatal mood and anxiety disorders when having a baby, but especially when there is trauma that has been experienced. So I'm so glad you're asking that, because oftentimes people aren't checking in on the partners. They'll be like, hey, how's your wife doing? How's your girlfriend doing? Hey, how's the baby doing? But they're not often like, how are you? How are you sleeping? What was that like for you when your baby got rushed to the neonatal intensive care unit? What was that like for you when your partner was going through that? You know, people don't often ask.
Yes. Oh, thank you. And that brings me to my next question, which was going to be how reproductive trauma actually has impacts on men as opposed to women, you know, because I know women and men, we are wired differently and we process things in different ways. How, in your own experience from being a psychotherapist and dealing with this issue, how do you see or perceive men processing reproductive trauma in a way that is different from how women process it?
Yeah, it's a great question. Every man is different, of course, but what I see as a trend is that men tend to pour themselves into work, or they tend to suffer silently, meaning they might start to drink more, or they might start to pour themselves into another project and start withdrawing more and more from their partner. Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately, as a society, we've done a really horrible job at making it safe for men to be vulnerable and to say, I'm not doing so well, I'm going to go get therapy, right? It is not often the case. And so what is more safe or acceptable is for a man to go pour himself into the gym or work or start doing something internal and hidden like gambling or drinking, etc. So you might see things like worsening mood or irritability or becoming more and more isolated and quiet. I've seen so many examples where men have been pouring themselves into home projects. I mean, God bless them. I've seen men even decide that that will be the time to like rip up all the floors in the house and do a massive project when their partner is still recovering from this massive experience to their body and still needing like quiet and healing. And instead, this might be the thing that their partner thinks is helpful. And it actually might feel safer for them to like, I'm going to tear down a wall, you know, and I'm not saying that hyperbolically, like literally, I've seen this happen over and over. And so this is why it's so important that as providers, but also as loved ones, that we're checking in on the men who've had a baby or have gone through maybe some really tough experiences going through infertility, especially when there's the infertility cycles that are not successful. We have to keep checking in on the men and partners because they are hurting too.
Ah, that's so nice. Thank you so much for sharing those insights. I know, you know, sometimes men block off everything and just want to be on by themselves and they go fishing.
Yes.
You know, sometimes, you know, something is just not right when they do something that is just completely not usual ways they would, the usual things and the usual activities they would get involved with. It's quite interesting that you mentioned all of that as well, because, you know, sometimes it could actually make them to switch off completely. All these experiences of having infertility, going through miscarriages and difficulties in getting pregnant or having stillbirths, it could also put them off their partners. And it could lead to a lack of sexual attraction. So how can people navigate such issues when it happens during their cycle?
Yeah, you mean intimacy, sexual intimacy?
Intimacy, yeah. I mean, what would you advise people to do when that happens, especially during this period of having to go through reproductive trauma?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you're asking this question, because this is something that is so important that we talk about and is often...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Because like, I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
Not talked about very much, but yet it impacts almost every single couple. So think about if there's a woman that has experienced any sort of reproductive trauma, whether it's infertility, whether it's a pregnancy loss, a traumatic birth, etc. Those are all traumas that have been experienced in the body. And a lot of these can be compounding too. So let's say a woman has gone through years of infertility and then does end up having a baby, but ends up having, let's say, a very stressful birth experience. And maybe she feels overtouched and overstimulated with breastfeeding. And she's really struggling maybe with self-blame about that. She might even say like, oh my gosh, I've worked so hard to get here. I should be enjoying this experience, but I am struggling. She is overstimulated. She just is feeling still, she's physically recovering, but also again, that overstimulation that can happen when you're experiencing trauma held in the body. And then here's this partner that has is feeling very disconnected. And one of the ways to connect, of course, is touch and physical and sexual intimacy. And there may have been a very long period of time since there has been either one, physical or sexual intimacy. And for a woman who is recovering from trauma that has been experienced in the body and especially in the pelvic area, that may be the last thing on her mind. And especially if she too is feeling disconnected from her partner, maybe she sees him distancing and working on the floors when she's like, why aren't you helping me? Why aren't you nurturing me? Why aren't you tending to me? I don't need the floors done. And he, on the other hand, is just doing his best to help out and may think that that is what's needed. And they just grow further and further apart. So this is so important. I ask every client about libido, about sexual intimacy, about emotional intimacy and connection and lack thereof with their partner. And you know, it's interesting. I have an entire chapter about this in both of my books because it is so important, but again, isn't talked about enough that sometimes we just need a basic structure and format in order to be able to navigate these conversations with each other. Because if we don't have that safety, what often happens is that then there's built resentment, and then there might be bids for connection and attention that fall completely flat. So maybe he says something like, oh my God, why don't you ever touch me anymore? And he says it in a way that isn't helpful, but what he's really trying to say is, I miss you. Mm-hmm. And she says something like, ugh, stop touching me. Like, I am so over it. Or why do you always like grab my boobs when I'm trying to, you know, breastfeed? I'm like over it, right? So what she's really trying to say is, I miss you too, but I don't want to be touched right now. Why don't you ask permission? Or why don't we just sit together on the couch? I just need a partner right now, right? So in other words, if we can learn how to have these conversations in helpful ways, we can slowly start building. I like to think of it as like a ladder, that ladder and that connection back to each other. But we have to have safety and trust in order to do that.
Oh, yes. That's absolutely right. Safety and trust, because a woman needs to feel safe. And even a man needs to feel safe when yes. in a relationship. And sometimes with all these experiences, it drives people apart, makes them think, okay, that person, I don't think I really... I really want to have anything with them right now. But
yeah.
if that continues for such a long time, then you yeah. lose the attraction, you lose the chemistry between the two of you. And that yeah. connection is what is actually required to move on from the trauma. So yeah. thank you so much for all the insights that you've given us. And you've also talked about your book a few times. We're going to get to that. I have something that I just penciled just now as you were talking. What's the role of religion and ethnicity in all of this, this trauma processing? Do you notice, or is there a trend that you've seen?
Yeah, that's crucial. And I appreciate you asking that. We have to honor people's full lived identities in order to provide true trauma-informed care. And that's that idea of meeting people where they are. And so often, again, that subjective nature of trauma, so often people are experiencing negative interactions with providers because they are not being supported in who they are, or maybe they've had lived experiences, especially people of color, especially people who are LGBTQ+, where maybe they've experienced already oppression and racism, bigotry, prejudice, and now they're in a healthcare setting, which is already so vulnerable to be in a healthcare setting as a patient, especially as a perinatal patient. And maybe this is one more time that they've felt overpowered, or they've been, their voice has not been respected, or their wishes have not been respected. So now in the mental health space, it's so crucial when someone is seeking support to honor and respect not just people's choices and to give them agency and choice, but to also honor their full lived experiences, but to also have an awareness that if I'm working with someone from a different cultural experience from me, especially as a white woman, especially as a white cisgender heterosexual woman, recognizing that there has been a potential for significant harm for this, that this person has experienced even coming into my space, and that it is, I have a sacred duty to be able to explore cautiously and carefully with this person. So in other words, you know, we know, for example, that like Black women and women of color already experience a disproportionately higher rate of perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, traumatic births, maternal mortality, infant mortality, same with folks in the LGBTQ population. And the risk is not they are Black women, for example, but that there are these systemic biases that there within the healthcare settings. So, I mean, oh my gosh, I appreciate this question so much because we could talk about this the whole podcast.
I know. Yeah, I mean, it's so amazing that you actually talked of the role of the providers, the healthcare system, in recognizing different issues that different races and LGBTQ community and even different communities truly have. Because sometimes I used to work as a translator and interpreter. I would be the one saying, oh, this is what I've obtained in Africa or in this particular community. I will be the one educating the healthcare providers. Well, they're supposed to already know these things. Yes. So it's really important that we highlight that as well. And what's in your experience, what is the impact of reproductive trauma on mental health for men as well as for women?
Oh, that is a really important question. I think this is where the prevention key comes in as well, and treatment, because without early intervention, the impacts of trauma can roll on and on and on. So you mentioned earlier on briefly this idea of the attachment with the baby, for example. That is one potential impact of reproductive trauma, because what we see both in the research as well as anecdotally in our practices is that people who've experienced reproductive traumatic events is that without care, without treatment, that this could potentially have a negative impact on the prenatal bond, meaning in utero, that there can be a feeling of like disassociation, detachment, etc. There can be higher maternal cortisol levels, meaning higher prolonged and increased stress levels that can impact a developing baby over time, but also afterwards, the postnatal bond can be impacted. By the way, for anybody who's listening right now and thinking, well, oh my gosh, I was stressed during my pregnancy, or like I experienced traumatic stuff. Oh gosh, am I doomed or is my child doomed? 100% no, because it is never, never too late to receive, first of all, your own support and your own healing. But also, I always like to say to people, bonding is a verb and unfolds over time. But also what we see is that for folks who've experienced trauma, oftentimes their bond is secure. It's that they're misperceiving their bond as insecure. So in other words, they're often doing all the acts of caregiving with their baby, but they're second guessing themselves. They're believing that they're doing the wrong thing. They're misperceiving their baby's cry as, my baby doesn't like me. See, she's crying. That means I'm doing the wrong thing. So I'm only giving you one example as attachment, but we've also talked about even some small examples of the impact on the relationship and how that can become a widening and distancing. There can be impacts on financial impacts like absences from work longer and longer, impacts on functioning, overlaps with other perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, like for example, obsessive compulsive disorder and PTSD have a very high overlap, et cetera, et cetera. So all of this to be said, I could go on. And I sound like a big bummer when I'm talking, but actually I like to leave people with hope. You deserve care and you deserve support no matter what you've been through. If it feels like it was distressing and traumatic to you, then it was. And you deserve support and you deserve care.
The issue of bonding with newborn babies, that happens a lot with even first-time parents, because they don't know what to. They're like, oh, the baby is crying. I picked it. I've given it. I've given the baby food. I've fed it, changed the diapers. It's still crying. The babies, yeah. Babies cry. That's, it's a normal reaction, you know, because they are just getting used to being outside of the womb where they are comfortable and, you know, and they are outside in these people that they don't really know. So it takes time for them to bond with the parents as well. So crying is an expression. So it's not that they are in pain or they're uncomfortable that they're doing anything wrong. They just cry because it's a natural reaction for babies. And some parents, some newborn, new parents don't understand that sometimes. And they're like, okay, my baby's crying all the time and they don't sleep. It leads to lack of sleep, leads to stress. Everybody's stressed. Nobody's sleeping and going to work. And sometimes you have to give up work to care for the baby. So all of those are things that just tie together. And sometimes the stress becomes too much for the parents as well. It's really important to discuss all of these issues and to raise the awareness about it. Yeah. I'm really grateful. So now let's go to your book and give me just two reasons why my listeners should read your books and where can they find the books.
Oh, thank you. I'm so grateful to be here with you too and to help spread awareness. And honestly, that's why I wrote both of my books, is to just keep sharing information with people. So my first book is called Pregnancy and Postpartum Mood Workbook. And I wrote it with a colleague, Dr. also a Beth, Beth Krieger-Berger. And it was to help people identify if they are feeling off, if they are experiencing any mood or emotional changes, either during or after their pregnancy, to build skills to be able to manage their moods and emotions, to help connect more with their baby and with their partner and build more and more of a village. And I'm so proud of that book. And then the second book is all about reproductive trauma, called Healing from Reproductive Trauma. And also, as we've been talking about, to honor and support people who've experienced anything from infertility, pregnancy loss, pregnancy complications, birth trauma, postpartum complications. Again, helping connect with their babies, connect with their partners, build support, thinking about if they want to conceive again, how to prepare for a subsequent pregnancy, etc. And you can get them on, you know, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, online. You can ask for them at your favorite local bookstore. I'm a big fan of supporting local bookstores, etc.
Do you have a website or social media handles?
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram on Bethany Warren LCSW. And my website is BethanyWarrenLCSW.com.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you for the insights that you've brought and this awareness. It's been, I've gone through some of this, and the fact that we're talking about it is just a way of making other people know that these things exist and there are ways that you can cope. And learning more about issues like this is one way to go forward. So I'm really grateful for your time today, and it's been amazing having you. Hopefully we'll come again and discuss some other issues in future. This podcast will be shared on all podcast platforms. Please subscribe. We're on Apple, Google, Spotify, YouTube, and anywhere you listen to your podcast. We are on good pods. And I mean, even if there's a bad pod, we are there. So please subscribe. Thank you so much. And always.
Thank you for having me.
A big thank you to all our listeners who have been sending us messages through the message link. I would like to thank everyone who has listened in so far and contributed to this podcast. Thank you so much. We couldn't have done anything without you. Keep listening, keep sharing, keep downloading, and keep liking. Thank you again.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
A BetterHelp ad. Lewis Capaldi partnered with BetterHelp to get word out about how important therapy can be.
Or I struggle most weeks to like get up, get myself up and ready and go to therapy or, you know, whatever. Like even like to open the laptop to talk to my therapist sometimes can be really difficult. But I do it because I realise how important it is for me to continue to feel good. Like, 'cause I felt the best I've felt in a long time through therapy.
Learn more about online therapy at betterhelp.com.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary with Minky Couture. Luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.